Hi there, and welcome to another interview. Today I've got the fabulous Dr. Lisa Wiedemann with me, and I'm going to ask her the question I ask absolutely every guest. Hey, Lisa, why did you become carnivore?
Wow. Well, Stephen, I'm sure that's a long story for most everybody because, you know, it's the path in life that we take that brings us to a point where we start trying to figure out the truth. That's the way I look at it. And, you know, I had a very long, horrible 30 years of disordered eating, binge eating, sugar and carb addiction that I could not figure out. I could not get out from underneath myself. It was horrible. It was secretive. And I just continued to try to search for an answer. And I was fortunate that I was surfing the internet. And this is way back in 2009, 15 years ago, and came upon a group run by and created by Charles Washington called Zeroing In on Health. It was a forum. This was before Facebook and Instagram and YouTube became a thing. So this was just, you know, blogs and forums that were out there. And yeah, I started reading, and it was just a forum of different people's journals of keeping their path through finding low carb, zero carb, Atkins induction phase. It was just this group of people that had actually gotten kicked off of a low carb forum because they were all talking about, well, heck, if that really strict induction phase of just eating meat works so incredibly well, why do we have to stop? And let's keep going. And the thread grew and they got kicked off, and that forum was born. And I'm so grateful for it because that was where I was able to connect with people, with like-minded people that were searching and seeking this similar answer. And in particular, there were two women in there that were discussing how this relieved them of their disordered eating. And I was like, whoa, okay, we're starting tomorrow, because this was late at night. And I'm going to say the rest is history, because it became so clear to me that this was the answer, that I didn't have to eat those things that I was so addicted to. And as long as I abstained and didn't eat them and they were not essential, wow, look what happens. Look what happened. And fast forward, here I am trying to be a inspiration, a motivation, and an example of what this way of life, and I call it a way of life instead of just a diet or a way of eating, because as many of you know who've come into this, you realize it's all encompassing as far as figuring out what they, the big pharmaceutical and food industry, have been deceiving us, the medical, healthcare industry, all of it. And so I just am so passionate to share where I've been, what's happened to me along the way, and where I'm going. And, you know, it's evolving. So in my membership group, I have this whole little lion diet challenge going on, because that is part of my ongoing journey here. I did lion originally because it was like, yeah, we ate meat and drank water. And then all of a sudden, all this noise came in with chaffles and fried cheese and heavy whipping cream and protein powders whisked into the drinks, and all this stuff came about, and it just became normal kind of carnivore stuff because everybody is doing it. Everybody's promoting it. And, you know, I like to say I've not taken any electrolytes through my 15-year journey here. It's so prominently spoken about as a necessity that makes me cringe. But, Yeah, getting down to the basics of eliminating dairy has been very eye-opening for me. And like I said, this is an evolving path that we're on. And I'm just so grateful that I'm in a position that I can share where I've been. But thanks for having me on. This is great.
That's okay. That's brilliant. And the thing is, I always have these best laid plans. And one of the reasons I love you is you just come in with so much information straight away. And there was a couple of things I want to talk about. I'll definitely come back to Big Pharma, Big Food and electrolytes. But there was a word there in that is one of those things that only people that have had these binge eating problems would actually get. And you said about secretiveness. Being secret. I wouldn't mind you just expanding on that a little bit, why you mentioned the secret eating.
I mentioned that because I have found it typically so hits home with people. Hoarding food, keeping that special food that you want hidden in the corner, going out and buying it, eating it in the car, and throwing the wrappers out before you get home. If you are home and having such said food, hiding the wrappers in the bottom of the trash, it's humiliating and embarrassing, the behavior that has come about from addiction. And I like to talk about it because it makes it more of a reality that this is really no different of an addiction than alcohol, cocaine, heroin. You have to realize when you're doing something that you know is harmful to your body and you're doing it repetitively and you're wanting to stop and you find that you can't, that's an addiction. And because sugar and carbs and processed foods are so normalized in a big way, everybody's eating them. Everybody's laughing around them. Everybody's offering them. What are we having? What are you bringing? Where are we going? It's food, food, food. And the majority of it is addictive to many people. And I know more so to some than others, but, you know, I know many alcoholics who have gotten sober and cross-addicted then onto sugar and carbs. Or same thing with a lot of cigarette smokers. Why do they tend to gain weight? Well, they're cross-addicting onto something else. And a lot of the times it's secretive. So I like to bring that out just to make it hopefully so that I'm very relatable to those out there suffering and to let them know there is totally a path out of this.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. If you're eating in secret, you know it's wrong, in inverted commas, but you don't want anyone else to know you're doing it. I mean, obviously, that's the definition of it. But I find that in coaching. Only a couple of days ago, someone said to me, oh, it's been going really well. We do like a check-in once a week or once every 2 weeks. He says, it's going really well. But my son wanted some chocolates the other day, and I went to the cupboard to get the chocolates, and I thought, wow, I haven't looked in this cupboard for 3 weeks. And it was a thing that he'd not really noticed he did all the time. So it was, so even to himself, it was sort of secret because he didn't realize that he was going to that cupboard 3-4 times a day. He works from home, which is, you know, terrible if you've got those temptations around. So, yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And I think the shame of eating those things is one of the things that we should talk about more, because big food has a lot of responsibility in this. They're deliberately making you addicted, aren't they? That's one of the things I find pretty upsetting. You also said about electrolytes, you've never touched them in 15 years. By the way, 15 years does prove it's sustainable for those that think this is a fad. Electrolytes, you've never touched, but people talking about them make you cringe. And are you talking about big influencers there or just everybody?
I guess it's more that I dislike seeing people, and I want to use the term misled. Certainly somebody will say, well, I'm a runner and it's Phoenix and it's 90 degrees out and I need to replenish and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, maybe for specific situations, fine. But in day-to-day life, I I think we have to think about ancestrally, if man was out hunting, getting their kill, dragging it to the village, feasting on the fatty meat, maybe a little organ, they are not reaching for the salt shaker. They're not getting their water and putting a packet of a combination of potassium, sodium, magnesium into this water. And that's more my discussion about it, is how natural is this? And really think about our human body is just an amazing, miraculous, remarkable entity that has to function within a fine range, a parameter of, and if you put too much or you put something in, it has to compensate for that. So it's really interesting. Well, just like if we eat a lot of high cholesterol foods, like red meat, shrimp, eggs, right? Our body compensates by not producing as much of its own. And if we eliminate all of those cholesterol-laden foods, our body has to kick up the production of cholesterol. I mean, this is not just a one-way street. It goes in and it's great. So I just think that we need to start wondering why we're doing what we're doing, why we're buying what we're buying. And simple is better. That's always really what I come down to. And yeah, I'm not against anybody who feels compelled to use their electrolytes, and maybe some are insistent that it is helping their leg cramps. But I will also interject that most of these said electrolytes are flavored and also have sweetener stevia in it. And how much of the drive to continue to pick up and drink said electrolyte water because it is feeding their sweet addiction. So that's my take on electrolytes.
Yeah, it's very interesting, actually, because I do feel the cephalic response and that sweet taste is something we should try to get away from. I agree with that, because it does seem to drive some people's food addiction. Just keeps you going, I think. You also mentioned cholesterol there. Now, you are a doctor. And there are doctors online that are talking about cholesterol, who I've got a lot of time for, because I feel we've been completely misled over cholesterol. The thing I'd like to actually get on to is firstly what your views are on cholesterol, but also why do you think there's always a new kid on the block that's sort of related to LDL cholesterol, like LP little A? Why do you think that's happening?
Well, I think it's human nature to fixate on things that we are, let's say, confronted with, as far as, I'll say, the naysayers, where people say, well, your fatty red meat diet might seem good to you now, but just wait 5 years when your cholesterol's through the roof and you're having a heart attack. And so I think most of the problem is because, you know, way back in the Ansel Keys, you know, a lot of us understand that whole deception back then with the manipulating studies and data, and that it brought about the, you know, in my opinion, the largest scam over the entire population. And you know, that's another thing that people get so hung up on numbers. And like, do you really think you've found this way of eating, you've changed, you're feeling better, you've dropped weight, you've got off some medications, you've got more energy, you've got this excitement for life now because your aches and pains are gone, your GI distress is gone, your skin issues, your mental fog, your anxiety, all these things are improving. But wait, you think your body is going to attack your heart and make that go afoul when every other indicator as you're going along is in the positive direction? What one thing, I beg of somebody to come up with, what one thing makes us think that our body is going to say, aha, I'm tricking you. Nope, not going to go that way. I'm getting your heart, baby. And I'm like, yeah. And so I tell people, I said, don't be fixated on these, you know, numbers, and don't feel like you're so compelled to test. And I say, you know, yes, my blood work is good. I went for a long period of time and didn't even bother testing it, because at the beginning I tested each year because, you know, I'm an intelligent, medically trained person. So I'm like, okay, I don't know. This is working for me, but I don't know. And it was fine. It was fine. 3-4 years in, and I said, why should I even bother testing anymore? What am I going to do different? If, you know, maybe one of the tests, the BUN, was just above the normal range, or something was just below. But what's the normal range? Are they basing it on a standard atrocious diet person, or are they basing it on an ancestral carnivorous, you know, eater? You know, that they're late. There's that argument too. But even if something's a little tiny bit out of range, right? You know, Stephen, what am I going to do? Am I going to start adding salad in? Ooh, I need a salad. Ooh, I need some kale. No. Like, what am I going to do differently? And just trying to picture myself, if I was out on a savanna, in a prairie, in a desert, wherever I was, what would I do to survive, right? And I wouldn't be testing my blood. I would be catching and eating animals as best I could. So, I keep going back to keeping it simple and not overthinking. But the cholesterol thing is so difficult. And what I did is I compiled a very extensive database from all of my years going through this, of any podcast or YouTube or any information, science, you know, PubMed publications. I put them all together, and some of them are, what is your cholesterol supposed to be based on a keto carnivore? Like, why is it potentially a little higher, and all these kind of things, so that somebody who comes in and is worried, I send them right there and I say, go down the rabbit hole. David Feldman, Philip Ovadia, the cardiac surgeon who himself eats this way. I said, you really have to educate yourself. You have to understand that you're not harming yourself, or else if you're on the edge and questioning it so intently, then the next family event you're at with Aunt so-and-so pushing her, you know, favorite apple pie a la mode on you, and you're like, you start wavering because you're like, well, this can't be good for me. And so you have to understand, you have to have the information that makes you feel confident going forward that you are doing the right thing.
That's really interesting that you mentioned your database there. I don't know if you know, but I used to do the private blood tests for many, many years, and I'm qualified phlebotomist. I actually ended up writing this book.
Uh-huh.
And things like that. So it's all fully referenced, and it's all about blood tests in relation to the way we're eating and why your blood urea nitrogen might be up, and many other things. The problems with EGFR and HbA1c and all that.
That's so great. I'll have to get the link for that and put that in my resources.
Yeah, I was going to say thank you for that. I mean, it's all referenced, and it's got case studies and everything, and it covers many things. LDL is in there as well. The other thing I really think you're quite brilliant about is sunlight. Now, on this screen, by the way, there's 120 years of experience, because both of us on this screen are 60 this year. All right. And I'm not scared of the sun. I used to be when I was high carb, and I have sunglasses on all the time, and I bought into all the sun cream stuff. And when I went low carb, not even carnivore, my sun sensitivity absolutely improved. I don't wear sunscreen. I haven't for 10 years. I feel like I've reverse aged by being out in the sun and not putting anything on me, allowing the fats that I'm eating to do their job within the skin, not on the surface. I don't burn. You know, I'm outdoors ever such a lot. At 60, I'm still playing soccer. which incidentally a doctor told me would not be possible, because when I was 23, I was shown an image of my hip and told I'd be in a wheelchair by 50. So you can be told things categorically and shown images categorically in a setting where you would be thinking, these are experts, this is going to happen to me, and they can be completely wrong. And I think sunlight is one of the things that to me seems so obviously a good thing to have on you. But you have pretty powerful views about this, I believe.
Yes, I do, because I feel like it's another one of those big elephants in the room thing that people are told, people believe, and people follow the fear narrative of, you know, wear protective clothing, wear a hat, wear sunglasses, sunscreen, put it on every 30 minutes. And it is just another one of those things which is the most far from the truth. And you get to that point where you start really understanding and believing that we need to do the opposite of what they out there, mass media, is programming us. And I do use that term, not loosely, but strongly, programming us to fear and to believe. And health is from the sun. Every animal, every plant, every organism needs the sun, and we are no different, and it's extremely important. And I feel like I'm one of the very rarest of rare eye doctors, because I've been in practice over 33 years now, and it wasn't always this way, because of course, going through school, I learned that we need to protect our eyes, and you don't want to get cataracts, so you wear sunglasses out in the sun. And, you know, it's gone on to the epidemic of macular degeneration and all those doctors saying you gotta wear sunglasses, and that's what we're told. And I, like I said, I feel like I'm a very, very rare entity in my field right now who, and I've actually done a YouTube video called Why This Eye Doctor Tells You Not to Wear Sunglasses. And so, yeah, the sun signals so much between when it hits our skin and when it goes into these amazing complicated computers called our eyes. They're not just for vision. Newsflash, they're really not truly just for vision. They are to signal our brain very intricate messages based on a lot of very intricate ganglion cells and nerve endings in there that send the message. Our eyeballs are connected directly to our brain. And, you know, simple things like the sun getting into our eyes is signaling to our brain and our body to protect ourselves from sunburn and to produce the melanin to tan. And if you put on these sunglasses and block that message, then there is much more likelihood of getting a burn. And it's also totally messes up your circadian rhythm. Because now when you put these on, your brain says, oh, nighttime is coming. It's getting dark. And so let me quickly say, because I'm consistently hit with these messages, but I live at the equator and I'm on farming all day, or I'm on the water, I'm a fisherman. I'm not telling you to never wear sunglasses. I am saying to prudently keep them off when you're just out and about. If you are on the water for the entire day or at the beach with the sun reflecting off the water and off the sand into our eyes, yeah, it's nice to have some sunglasses on for comfort, you know, here and there. And snow skiing, similar situation. I mean, you can get a solar keratopathy. You can actually get a sunburn on your corneas of your eyes. So I'm not saying to be dumb here. I'm just talking in general. It's so interesting because the day-to-day habits of people are sunglasses on, I'm outside, and I'm saying sunglasses off. And it's really interesting that some people say, but I'm so photophobic. It's the glare is horrible for me. And I say, well, do it 10 minutes at a time. Guess what? You're going to be able to build up because you're so used to wearing those sunglasses. So, you know, there's so much intricacy into this. But in general, if my message could be, don't use sunscreen. It's toxic. It's poisonous. And let the sun be on your skin and let the sun into your eyes. That's really a good message. There are some really good sunscreens that are tallow-based and are safe kind of things that you can wear when you are in a situation where you can't get to shade or you're out for hours. I get that again. There's a point where you need some help, but you all get what I'm saying. It's so important to let the sun shine in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is underestimated, the power of being out in the sunlight. I noticed an interesting study way back. I was an advanced personal trainer. I managed to get somebody to the Olympics javelin throwing. I was very proud of that. But I got into the science of the treadmill, and there was a study which I think you would find interesting, which was to do with the eyes, actually. And they were looking at the performance of people on the treadmill who look straight ahead and normally at a screen. And then they put a treadmill outside and had lots of activities which would sort of mimic somebody actually running in the wild. And the same person, by just moving their eyes, improved their performance. Or conversely, by just staring straight at a screen in front of them, doing the same amount of running, same pace, their performance was not as good just by not using their eyes, not being outside. And I think things like this, I've actually said to people on treadmills, try to move your eyes around, look around the screen and be a bit more interested in your environment. I think about 70% of the people I've said that to over the last 15 years have said it has improved my running. I just feel better running rather than, you know, all the gyms put those screens in front of you. This isn't something I get into now. I don't really do the running coaching so much, but I think I'd like to get onto the screens as well for your eyes, because there's also now, you know, blue block glasses and software to change the colour, or even just changing the hue on your iPhone or whatever to orange. You know, do you have any advice for people looking at screens, how to mitigate the problems?
Yeah, you know, I am definitely of the belief that we have so dramatically changed from our natural environment to artificial light. So, you know, part of that sunlight in our eyes has to do with, you know, I think really good habits are when you get up in the morning before you even look at your phone or turn on your, you know, LED lights around you, artificial lights, you open a door, open a window, just get some natural sunlight, some morning sunlight into your eyes. That's to start. And to what you were saying about the outside and looking around and being in nature, so important. I like to try to get everybody at least an hour during the day, spend it outside. It's a little harder in the winter. I get that. But, you know, we can bundle up and walk out there too. And if possible, get a little sunset sunlight in the eyes. Once the sun has set and you're in your home, I do believe it's beneficial to have blue block, you know, glasses on. And I think that, you know, it's really difficult because there's so much information about the NNEMF, right? And the Wi-Fi, like everything that's toxic in our environment, and we can't avoid it all. And I'm pressing myself to even do things like not wear my iWatch and, you know, and Fitbit devices anymore. Just trying to simplify and get away as much as I can, but I'm not at the point yet where I know I should. I should direct link Ethernet cable my devices. It's just not happening yet for me, Stephen. But I do believe of the benefit. I am or have ordered a cover for my Wi-Fi router, which, and then I've also ordered a, I just got, an EMF meter, so I can kind of walk around and see. And it's crazy. It's everywhere. My new refrigerator freezer that I just renovated a condo and put in, I'm disappointed and dislike the fact that it is Wi-Fi enabled. And I wish I would have known and realized that ahead of time and would have had the technician potentially, because there is a way they can go in and disconnect that. But gosh, all of this stuff is, it gets to be overwhelming. It really does. But we can just keep trying to do the best we can. Switch out your plastic containers and get the glass, right? We all kind of know the standard things to do, but bit by bit, step by step, we just keep trying to do better and trying to avoid disease.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel I'm ahead of the game with some of the things. My thing is cabled right now. I definitely agree with all that. There's no Wi-Fi in the bedroom and all that. I never got on with the blue block glasses, so I just try not to be doing too many things late at night. And if I'm doing a live stream and it's late, I just have to accept that and keep away from the screens afterwards. But I think people appreciate your honesty, because we're coaching people, but we're not perfect. We can't do everything, but you can certainly try to be the example and at least be honest and say, right, that's the way I'm going. I definitely think EMF is difficult. I think the screens are difficult, and this is going to be more relatable than if you just sat there and said, well, I'm perfect. I live in a completely EMF-free zone, because that's not your life, is it? If you're on YouTube, if you're doing online consults, you have to be part of it. So all you can do is mitigate it the best you can.
Yeah, and I do try. As of really starting to understand how really toxic this onslaught of blue light is, because, you know, in general, we spend 93% of our time indoors. That's the estimate of for most people, and it's under artificial light. And so I think it's important to think about and start incorporating different changes. And like you said, for me, what I attempt to do now is get my work done during the day. I also am fortunate I can go outside and do some of my work. And once the sun sets and it is dark, is the point where my intention and I attempt to not be on my phone, my iPad, my computer. I don't ever put on the TV, so that's not an issue. But doing it that way, and because I have to be honest, for the most part, I am really finding putting those red orange glasses on, it annoys me too. You can't see colors the right way, so I can't do graphics. And a lot of times, a lot of my work is making graphics or, you know, things like that. So I was like, you know what? I think this is a signal to me to just power down and, we can do a little candlelight, but then what do we have with candlelight? Oops, got to get worried about no fragrances and the paraffin, and we can go down the candle rabbit hole. I am going to do an actual YouTube video about fragrances and candles too, because it's really, really very interesting.
Yeah, I look forward to that. I was smiling away because we use candles every so often. But right, I will get told off if I don't ask you the basic questions about food, because this is mainly a carnivore podcast. But I think once you become open-minded enough to want to eat carnivore, you're probably open-minded to many other things. I think that's a generalization, but I think in the main true. So what's your day of eating? Is it too mad? Oh, mad? What do you do?
Yeah, so my eating is definitely a combination of too mad and OMAD. So either once a day or twice a day. I could say I can't remember the last time I ate three meals. And part of that is because I'm a volume eater. I've got a volume disorder from coming from a binge disorder past. When I eat, I like to eat, and I like to eat a bunch of food. I don't want to eat just one burger patty at 8 a.m. and then, ooh, I'm hungry again at 1, so I'm going to have another burger patty. Nope, nope, nope. I will just wait till I get hungry and have 3 or 4 burger patties. And then from there, decide if that's actually enough for the whole day, or am I hungry again around 4 or 5? I do try to not eat, you know, late. I try to have my last meal no later than 6. And so sometimes it's one meal at 2 or 3 o'clock, and sometimes it's a 9 a.m. and a 4 p.m. But that's really where I'm at. And right now I'm doing a lion diet challenge with my group. So it's ruminant meat and water. And many of us are also doing a no salt part, because normally lion diet is ruminant meat, salt, and water. And I'm finding remarkable, in a very profound way, change in my, I'll just say, in my relationship with food. I am enjoying the flavor and the taste of the meat, and realize I thought I was going to go crazy wanting to grab that salt shaker. I thought for sure this would be so bland and horrid, and I am finding the exact opposite. I'm finding the actual flavor of the lamb. I'm basically eating lamb and beef, but the flavor of it is coming out so much, and I'm enjoying that. And it's almost, and I'm saying almost, a distasteful thought to now shake salt on it. And I did some research into the fact that salt actually is addictive. And think about bacon. I can't stop with bacon. I make a pound, I eat a pound, because that's just the way it is for me. I don't have sober behavior around bacon. I could eat a few slices and think, okay, I'm good, and then walk by it 10 minutes later and have another 2 pieces. And then when I go to put it away in the fridge, I will have the rest. So it's the salt, though, because you could buy pork belly, plain pork belly. And I challenge anybody to say differently, but you make that plain pork belly and, you know, put it in the air fryer. I've cut it so it gets crispy and all. But without the salt, are you driven to overeat it? Are you driven to eat more like I would when it's salted or seasoned? And so I'm just putting it out there. I know Charles Washington never salted his meat for 16 years now. Dana Spencer, another 16-year carnivore, does not and has not, through her entire carnivore journey, salted her meat. And so many people come at me with, oh, that's essential. You have to you're crazy. What are you doing? Dehydration and, you know, this and that. And I'm like, well, I'm doing my experiment. You do yours. I'm feeling great. And that's all I can relay to you, is that it's really changing my, my compulsion or cravings to overeat things. That's why I had to give up cheese too. It's no sober behavior with this girl around cheese either.
Yeah, that's common with dairy, isn't it? And just for those listening, the links to your group will be in the description, so they don't have to, you don't have to spell it out. They'll be able to just click that link. And my book, I'll put a clickable link to that as well. I'm getting that you're very into being intuitive with eating, but I still ask this question because I get people in the comments saying, you didn't ask, do you track your macros?
Oh, so that is a very interesting question, because I am very analytical. I am very curious, and I always think to myself, I can't monitor what I don't measure. And I like to know if I'm feeling, let's say this past week went by and wow, I'm feeling great. My energy's great. My sleep's better than ever. And I'm even inching closer to that ideal percent body fat that I'm always craving to get to. Well, if I didn't track, I want to know, was my ratio, my macro 60-40? Was it 75-25? Was it 50-50? How many calories did I take in? How much protein? I never worry about, people say, you got to make sure you get enough protein. And how do you get enough protein without using protein powders? I'm like, oh my gosh, protein. That's like, I'm way over on my protein just from eating burgers and steak all day. And then, you know, I used to also include eggs, which again, with this lion diet challenge, you don't eat the eggs. But gosh, yeah. So, and for some people, it's a good idea to just let the tracking go for a while. Just stay on course. Just stay out of the carb ditch. Just eat meat till you're satisfied. If you're hungry or you're having that emotional snacking event, go eat more meat. Don't pay attention. You might even put on a pound or two. For those who are in this world where I've been at with having compulsions and cravings and just addiction to these foods, it's so important just to get on track. And then from there, then you can tweak, you know, a little tweak here, a little there. Let's figure out what's happening, you know, the old diarrhea versus constipation. If you're really new to this, maybe you should pay attention to what your fat level's at, or maybe just start eating leaner meat for a little while. But the tracking thing is a tough one because some people say, oh, I hate to track. I don't want to be that focused on my food. And you know, sometimes I say, you know, sometimes tracking is the very best thing for a person like you to actually, for the first time, pay attention and learn and monitor so that you can make an intelligent decision going forward as to what to do.
That's great. That is a brilliant answer. I didn't expect anything less. So, Dr. Lisa, thank you very much for your time. And I look forward to seeing you in July because you're one of the guests on the 24-hour live stream. So thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Stephen. I look forward to it too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Your support means the absolute world to me. And if you're enjoying the show, I've got a small favour to ask you. I'd be incredibly grateful if you would consider becoming a supporter and make a small monthly donation. Your contribution will really help to improve the show. I'll be able to improve the software, maybe put a few more episodes out, and do many things that I'm hoping to do in the future. Do them a lot quicker. So, it's a small monthly contribution. You can cancel at any time, and the link is in the show notes. Thanks very much for listening.